because important people are provinces today. She's saying we don't need them. We only need them on the second bill, the Children's Amendment Bill. Remember, the Section 76 one is the one that went to provinces. The first one was the Section 75. So I just want to check with you, can we start? Hoping that they will join us before we finish. Okay, where's my agenda? No, good morning, all members. I think we should declare our meeting open. As usual, let's start our meeting by observing a moment of short prayers and meditation. Can we? Thank you. I do not have an apology. I don't know myself, did not, if there is one, but I don't have an apology from my side. There is only two provinces that are not here, not you now, Zan. It's Western Cape, but we were told that she is on her way. And Northern Cape, but we do form a quorum. I think it's important to say that because we're going to vote for this bill. Honorable Zwane.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would request to be released at 12.
Okay,
thank you.
No, thank you very much. It shouldn't be a problem. I just want to go back to the overview. Where are we now with this bill? We started on the 20th of September by receiving a briefing from the Department of Social Development. Then this was followed by members going to provinces to brief their provinces. Thereafter, it was public hearings. Then last week, we received negotiating mandates from provinces. All provinces, which went through them and sent the minutes to provinces. Today we are finalizing the bill where members will be reading their final mandates from their provinces to finalize this bill from our side as a committee. We'll then present it to the House on the 8th of December. It was initially the 6th, but it has been shifted to the 8th of December. So that's where we are now today, oral members. We will follow the same pattern we followed last week by requesting members to read mandates from their provinces, and we will do it alphabetical order, starting with the Eastern Cape to go through their mandate. Honorable Samka.
Good morning, honorable members. I'll just go straight to the mandate from the Eastern Cape. The province supports the bill and mandates the Eastern Cape delegation to the NCOP to vote in favor of the bill. It was signed by the Honorable Speaker Nkolo Kivit, Eastern Cape Provincial Legislature. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
It will be first stage.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Good morning. Free State Legislature, a final voting mandate to the Chairperson of the National Council of Provinces. Name of the bill, Children's Second Amendment Bill, number of the bill, B14B/2015. Date of deliberation, 25 November 2016. Vote of the legislature, the Free State Legislature vote in favor of the bill, The bill was signed by the Speaker of the Legislature, Honorable Member Miki Qabat, on the 25th November 2016. Thanks very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. Followed by Gauteng.
Madam Chair, good morning and thank you. I have the final voting mandate from the Gauteng Legislator to the Chairperson of the National Council of Provinces, Honourable Thandi Modise, and the name of the bill is the Children's Second Amendment Bill, and the number of the bill is B14B 2015. The date of deliberation was on the 24th of November 2016, and the vote of the legislator, the Gauteng Provincial Legislator, supports the principle and detail of the bill and therefore votes in favour of the Children's Second Amendment Bill, and signed by Honourable Ntombi Mkwe, Speaker of the Gauteng Provincial Legislature. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Followed by KwaZulu Natal.
Thank you, Chairperson. The funding mandate is conferred by KwaZulu Natal Legislature, addressed to the Chairperson of the National Council of Provinces, Children's Second Amendment Bill, number B14B 2015, is as follows, Chairperson. The KwaZulu-Natal Legislature met on Thursday, the 24th of November 2016, and agreed to mandate the KwaZulu-Natal delegation to the National Council of Provinces to support the Children's Second Amendment Bill, B14B 2015, signed by Leader Johnson, the Speaker of KZN Legislature. Thank you.
Thank you, KwaZulu Natal Limpopo.
Good morning, Chairperson. Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. This is the final mandate from Limpopo Legislature to the Chairperson of the National Council. Name of the bill, Children's Second Amendment Bill. Number of the bill, B14B/2015. Our vote of the legislature ends will be permanent delegate to vote in favor of the bill signed by the Speaker of the Provincial Legislature, Honorable Paul Bushira. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Limpopo. Then it's Mpumalanga. I'm a chairperson. I'm a player and a referee. Zwane, do you want to read it for me, please?
Okay. I'm trying to find the chair. Mpumalanga. Thank you, Chairperson. The final mandate conferred by Mpumalanga Legislature is as follows. It's addressed to the Chairperson of the National Council of Provinces. It is the Children's Second Amendment Bill, number B14B 2015. It was deliberated on the 24th of November 2016. And it is as follows. The delegation representing the province of Mpumalanga in the National Council of Provinces is hereby conferred with a mandate to vote in favor of the bill, signed by Mrs. Bitu Shongwe, the Speaker of the Legislature. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Zwane. What province? Northern Cape.
Thank you once more, Chairperson. On behalf of the Northern Cape, the mandate reads as follows, which is the final one. Honorable Timudise, Chairperson NCOP, final mandate in name of the bill, Children's Second Amendment Bill, number of the bill B14B/2015, date of deliberations, Thursday, 24 November 2016, vote of the legislature, the Northern Cape Provincial Legislature votes in favor of the bill signed by the Speaker, Honorable K. Mwema. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mpuru. Then the Western Cape. Northwest. Where is Northwest? Okay. Northwest. Sorry, Chris. It's Northwest.
Thank you, Chair. The final mandate of the Northwest Provincial Legislature, as conferred on the 24th of November on the Children's Amendment Bill, is as follows. The Northwest Provincial Legislature votes in favour of the Children's Second Amendment Bill, and is duly signed by the Speaker of the Northwest Provincial Legislature, Honourable Susan Tainke, on the 24th of November 2016. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The final one is North Western Cape. Western Cape.
Thank you, Chairperson. My apologies for coming late. I got caught up somewhere. The final mandate of the Children's Second Amendment Bill, B14B of 2015, that has been addressed to Honorable Thandi Modise, of the Chairperson of the National Council of Provinces, deliberated on the 25th of November and signed as a final mandate by Honorable Speaker of the Western Cape, Shana Fernandez, yesterday, the 28th of November, is in full support of the bill. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Thambo Spokwane. Honorable members, all provinces voted in favor of the bill. That leads me in reading our report. We're not going to raise our hands because we're voting as we're reading the final mandates. Okay, is this one? Are you sure? This is the second one. Okay. I'm going to read the report, all members, so that we can sign it. Report of the Select Committee on Social Services. Report of the Select Committee on Social Services on Children's Second Amendment Bill, Bill 14 of 2015. 14B of 2015. Which is Section 76 Bill. Department of Social Development briefed the committee on the 20th September 2016 on the Children's Second Amendment Bill, Bill 14B of 2015. The bill was referred to committee on the 30th of August 2015. The Select Committee on Social Services, having deliberated on and consider the subject of the Children's Second Amendment Bill, Bill 14B of 2015. Why do you write to this National Assembly? Okay, after it was referred by National Assembly, Section 76 referred to it and classified by the JTM as a Section 76 bill. Report that it has been agreed to. I just want to read the last part because it was not clear. Starting from referred to it as classified by JTM as a Section 76 bill, report that it has agreed to as a bill. This is the report, all members, that we going to sign as a committee. I don't know if there's anything that we want to correct or amend before we sign it. Members, can we? Are we fine? Thank you very much. I think we deserve a round of applause. It was a hectic bill. Very much on this bill because it was since we started for the first time where we were sort of compelled to go and attend public hearings. I think we did it without failure except on few occasions, but most of us, even though not attended all of them, but we tried our best as a committee to attend. Honourable members, that leads me to the next bill. The Children's Amendment Bill, which, because it is a Section 75, I'm going to request the department just to remind us, to give us an overview, so that when we finalize, we still fresh in our minds what is in the bill, what is contained by the bill. Mina na wevele sesicabene mina na. But over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. I would like to firstly apologize, Sibalukhulu, for being late. There were circumstances beyond my control. I sincerely apologize. Thank you. So the request was to assist committee members refresh their memory in relation to the contents of the 75 bill, the Children's Amendment Bill. Chair, the bill firstly seeks to align with the provisions of the Sexual Offences Act, because there is an anomaly in relation to the offences that are referred to the Children's Act with those that are referred to in the Sexual Offences Act. So we want to align and make sure that all the offences are covered. Secondly, it seeks to create a deeming provision in Section 124, thereby making easy to find persons who are convicted of certain offences against children, unsuitable to work with children, thereby strengthening protection to children. And then it also seeks to align with Section 50 of the Criminal Law, Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act, which has a specific and separate procedure when it comes to including children, child offenders, into the sexual offences register. So we are aligning following the Constitutional Court judgment, which provided guidance as to how child offenders are supposed to be treated in relation to their inclusion in the sexual offences register. Since our register is also of a similar nature, we therefore aligning with Section 50. In relation to historical offences contained in Section 120, subsection 5, we also creating an equivalent deeming provision, and also creating an exception for children so that they are not dealt with in the same manner as you will deal with adult offenders. And then the next amendment seeks to place an obligation on the Commissioner of the South African Police Service to forward particulars of those individuals who have been convicted of offences against children to the Director General of the Social Development, so as to increase the sources of information from which we get it as a department. And then the next one intends to allow persons whose particulars were included in the register whilst they were children an opportunity to apply for the removal of their particulars after attaining the age of majority, because the belief is that the circumstances may have been different when one was immature when committing those also. After attaining the age of majority, you need to have that window of opportunity for one to apply for the removal. And then on Section 152 is to simply create a procedure or to guide presiding officers as to how to deal with the review proceedings and the type of orders that they may issue when the matter for reviewing an order to remove a child is placed before them. And then the next amendment is on Section 243, which is to add additional categories of adoptable children, which were categories that were erroneously omitted when the Act was initially passed. And then the last one is simply to correct an unintended consequence of a divorce order whereby if the adoption is done by a partner to a biological parent, the divorce order, the effect thereof is to terminate all parental rights and responsibilities of a biological parent. Whereas if they are married or they are in a life partnership with the prospective adoptive parent, it's an untenable situation because they are still parenting the child. So that one is seeking to create an exception under those circumstances to say, in those circumstances, the parental rights and responsibilities do not terminate. That brings us to the end of the amendments, Chair. I was running through them briefly without going into details, Chair. Thank you.
I would want to ask you to repeat the parental right. What happens if parents were... If it was not parents, then what happens if it's parents? Can you just repeat the last part that you spoke to?
Chair, under normal circumstances, if you put up your child up for an adoption, upon the order being granted, your parental rights and responsibilities cease to exist, and you no longer in law considered to be a parent to the child. Now, if for instance, for convenience, you are married to somebody who is not a biological parent to your child, and that person for convenience wants to adopt the child, the effect of an adoption order is that you as a biological parent will cease to have parental rights and responsibilities. And it's an untenable situation because you are still in contact with the child and you are parenting together with your spouse. So this amendment seeks to create an exception for those couples to say, in such circumstances, the effect of an adoption does not terminate the parental rights and responsibilities.
Okay, that is the brief, just to remind us what is contained by the bill. Honourable members, I don't know, state law advisors, are they here? No, they are not. Okay, is there anything, honourable members, before we go to the voting of the bill, just to remind ourselves, we got a briefing also on the 20th of September on this bill. It was advertised on newspapers. We did not receive any submission on this particular bill. So there is nothing to consider for this bill. Unless if there is something that members want to say, we have to go straight to voting. Is there anything that we want to say? It seems to be straightforward. Honorable Zwane?
No, thank you, Chair. It's just straightforward, really. Except to say that the last part where you requested further clarification to me is not yet very clear. Does it mean that, because you'd have thought quite considerably before you decide to give the child in for adoption, you don't want to take the parental responsibility of being a parent to the child, but because of the spouse that you are married to, who wants to consider adopting the child, Are you saying therefore that the law is forcing you to parent the child? Just the clarity there, Chairperson.
Okay, before you respond, any other member who wants to make input? Because the other question could be, who is giving up the child for adoption? Who? In that particular incident. Because remember you said when you put up your child for adoption, you seize your parental rights. Now, in this case, one person who's staying with the person who's adopting the child is a parent. Who is putting up for adoption? Can you adopt even if parents did not put the child up for adoption? Why adopt?
First, I wanted you to elaborate my point, because if you then adopt a child for whom you are a natural parent, I don't understand. Are you not subjecting the child to abuse because you actually decided to give the child in for adoption initially? Now, when the child is brought back to you under your care, is the child not going to be subjected to abuse?
It's even more complicated. The more we talk about it, for me, is the more it becomes complicated, because it means that the it's either the parents divorced or separated, or they before they separated, or before, because now one child is staying with this spouse who's adopting. Doesn't it cut powers of the other parent? It only gives one parent rights, parental rights. What happens with the other parent who is not within this, one who is not staying with the child?
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. In practical term, Siyabonga will talk the legal part. In practical term, what we're trying to say is that if two couples, one is the biological parent of a child, in most cases you find that the other partner wants to adopt for convenience. Sometimes it's for the surname change and also inclusion in your medical aid, in your insurances and all that. So that's why the other partner will say, let's agree to adopt so that they share the same surnames, maybe with other children that have been born between the two, but the other partner has got a child that was born out of the relationship that is currently happening. Now, the proposal is saying, let these two parents have equal rights at the moment. You don't seize your parental responsibility as a biological mother, because by the virtue of adoption, if you give up for adoption and sign consent, it means you seize your parental responsibility. You don't have rights over that child. But with this amendment, we say even there, when there's an adoption within amongst the two of the parents, you still have parental responsibilities to parent and have rights over the child. That's what we're trying to say with the amendments. But Siyabonga will assist me with the legality part of it, when the two parents now separate and divorce, what happens?
Another thing that we should consider is that from a divorce flows many legal consequences and benefits for the adoptive child. So, which is the reason why maybe some parents in those relationships will want, if I'm a stepdad to a child, maybe I would want him to benefit from the legal benefits that flow from the adoption. hence you will then go for your adoption other than having that informal arrangement of being a stepfather who is not recognized as a legal parent in law. I think the question that the chair asked is what happens to the other natural parent. I think the law would have requires the consent of, I think that parent would have consented. If there is no consent, then the adoption would not take place in the first place, because the consent of both natural parents is required for the adoption to proceed, unless that parent is normal. So the parent would not be prejudiced in any way because the consent would have been obtained from him or her. If then the parent is prepared to put up the child for adoption, then the adoption will go through.
My problem is when you say, I think. Once you say, I think, it means that you are not sure. Yeah, that's what you said. You said, I think
okay. The
other parent would have consented. That is what we're trying to correct in these laws. They must be clear. It must say, if the parents divorced, and now this new stepfather, if we put it straight, or stepmother, whoever, is adopting, wants to divorce the child, it must be clear about the other parent to say what happens to them. He must consent. The law must be clear on that area, because you'll find that they adopt the child, he try to come and see the child only to find that he no more owns the child. He doesn't have rights. The mother have rights because he stays with the new husband, but the original father, natural father, does not have rights to the child because the child is adopted by this one now. So it must be clear to say, what does it say about the natural father? Honorable Ngwenya.
I'm still not answered in the, especially after the lady has spoken here. I'm sorry, I don't know your name. I just feel that there is a party here that is will be forced to parent, whether they like it or not. Mm-hmm. When you say that if they are divorced and the natural mother, now the spouse wants to adopt this child, now the mother is supposed to be part of the parenting. What Honorable Zwane has said, when you give up a child, you don't want to be part of that child. Mm. So when your spouse, which is the step-parent, wants to take this child on and adopt them, and I still feel I do not want that child, I still feel that will put the child under a serious possibilities of abuse from the other parent that did not want the child initially. Have you considered the physical or emotional abuse mm-hmm. of that child? Thank you, Chair.
No, my hand is not up. I do not want to comment on these ones because my background is very African. And all these things you're talking about are not there in my background. I know what to do. I don't have to go to the courts.
Okay, you want to respond?
Yes, Chair. Chair, I think...
Because when you respond, also respond now, the stepfather has adopted this child. They divorce. What happens? What happens? He has divorced they are divorced now, but he has adopted the child. What happens?
Chair, I think the first point, I think in order to understand the amendment properly, let's not move from a premise that the natural parent does not want the child. This is not the basis of the adoption. The parent still wants to parent and have the responsibilities and rights to the child. but because of some other reasons and the rights that flows from the adoption, they opt to go for that route and adopt the child. So it's not an unwanted child in these circumstances. Now, what happens if they divorce? There is a recent... The natural father, may I withdraw the phrase, I think, because the law is clear that the consent of both parents is required. That's the law as it stands. There is a recent judgment that has been handed down by the North Gauteng High Court. It's a matter that the department was also involved, wherein it has ruled that in some circumstances, an adoptive parent may be absolved from the adoption arrangement and terminate the parental responsibilities of an adoptive parent. So there is a precedent, Chair, already that if in that arrangement there is a divorce, the adoptive parent will still have an option to walk away from the arrangement. But I don't have the exact citation and the parties of that particular case, but it's a judgment that was handed down last year.
Meaning that is an adoption of convenience. That's what I hear from you now.
Yes, for the lack of a better word, Chair.
Okay. Zwan.
I'm sorry, Chairperson. This is just my own personal observation. The emotional aspect of the life of a child, I don't think it has been carefully considered in this case. And it becomes worse. You are saying that let us not move from the premise that this is not an unwanted child. What if it is? What if the basis of giving the child up for adoption was the fact that the mother did not want to have anything to do with the baby? And what happens then if she is forced to stay with the baby? From an emotional point of view now, not from a convenience point of view.
What members are saying is not always the case. It could be possible that the child was up for adoption. That's what they are saying. And this man, let me talk about not a stepfather, this man decides to adopt the child. But he happened to marry the mother of the child he adopted. Meaning that now, it's not always a one way. Yeah. The wife will be forced to stay with... What if it could be like that?
I think that will be picked up by the investigation that precedes an adoption, which will then reveal that this child was put up for an adoption because of an abusive situation at home, which will then exclude the stepfather from being a prospective adoptive parent.
Let me repeat what they are saying. They are saying, it's me, Landulile Dlamini, I give up my child for adoption. Let's forget that I was once married. You know, most the child belongs to a, if you are not married, belongs to a mother. Am I right?
Not really.
Not now.
Yeah, not now.
Okay, whatever way. Whether married or not married, let's say I give up the child for adoption. I agree with my boyfriend, whoever, before we agree that we're giving this child up for adoption. Now, I meet this handsome man. We agree. We get married. let's say it happens like that. We agree to get married. But now he continues with the process of, he adopts this child, knowingly or unknowingly. Maybe he does that because he wants to please me or he's forcing me to stay with the child. That's what these members are saying. What happens in that case? Because now I'm forced to stay with this child that I gave up for adoption. Maybe let's say I was raped. There is no father to pin down there because you are saying the child does not belong to a mother. I don't know if I'm raped, who will be the father there? Let's say I was raped. I got a child. I decided not to kill, but I will give the child up for adoption. Now, I married this boyfriend, this new boyfriend of mine. He wants to adopt this child. He said, oh, you don't want the child, but I want the child. I want to adopt the child. What about the emotions of the mother? That is what they are asking. Where does it put the mother who don't want the child? What does the law say?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Within the Principal Act, we also outline the normal adoption process. We don't finalize that. The courts won't finalize an adoption when there's no consent from the biological parents. So in terms of just what you just said now, let's say you as a mother, biological mother, you don't want to emotionally be connected with the child. You've got various options that we have. When the social worker compiles the report, there are options that you have. It's adoption, is your alternative care where a child can be placed somewhere else. So no one should put you under pressure to be able to adopt or stay with a child whom you feel emotionally you are unable to care for. So we have various options of alternative care. So in that process, that is taken care of. With this amendment, if you look at it, it's specifically for the life partner and for convenience purposes. That's why, because most parents were saying, I've agreed with my partner to adopt, and now it looks like I've given my parental responsibility to my boyfriend, to my spouse, and as a biological parent, it looks like I don't have full responsibility. So that's what we're trying to correct.
I think, Honourable Zwan, the Principal Act does cover that. I think it's what they were missing, meaning that as a biological parent, you still have a say who to adopt your child. That's what you are saying. If you don't want this stepfather to adopt the child, you can still say no. So that assists the process forward. Thank you very much. All members will vote on this one. I will do the same as I did with the first bill, starting with Eastern Cape. In favor of the bill, or we're voting now.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'm not clear. Okay, Chair. I vote in favor, Chairperson.
Just for clarity's sake, this is a Section 75 bill. So the voting is not per province, it's per individual.
Members.
Yeah. So
that is why you wanted to clarify. Okay. You want me to call you by the members or ask you to raise your hands? Okay, all members, can we vote for the bill? Who is voting in favor for the bill? Who is that one? Oh, man, who is pulling my leg there? all members are voting in favor.
There appear to be one abstention, Chair.
Which one?
You.
Oh, yeah. You, Chris, we are not. thank you very much. The bill has been voted in favor by all members. including myself. I will read the report. You said, who is that with? Okay. I will read the report of the Select Committee on Social Services, report of the Select Committee on Social Services on Children's Amendment Bill B13B of 2015, Section 75 Bill, dated 29 November 2016. The Select Committee on Social Services, having considered the subject of the Children's Amendment Bill, Bill 13B of 2015, referred to it, reports that it has agreed to the bill. That is the report that we are submitting as a committee. Is there anything that members feel that I should correct, add, amend? Are we fine with the report before I sign it? We are fine.
We are fine, Chairperson, you can sign it.
Thank you very much, honourable members. I want to take this opportunity to thank the department. I don't know who's thanking who, or they are thanking us, or we're thanking them, but somebody has to thank somebody. From our side, we want to thank you for identifying these gaps in the Principal Act and come up with some amendments. I think from the committee side, we are done. What is left is to present the two bills to the House on the 8th of December 2016. Thank you very much. We will have a short break to allow the department to be excused. We will be taking a human settlement at 11:30. But before that, we have minutes that we need to consider, honourable members. But we can help ourselves with tea and something while they are moving out.
Thank you. We have budget this year because we have nothing to do with this. On the day, when is it presented? It's not our program, it's in the age.
I'm
just thinking enough.
Members, maybe before we go to the minutes, I will suggest that we look at the program. Maybe before we look at the program, I just want to draw members' attention on the fact that we had said that before the end of the financial year, that is 31st March, we must have gone to Mpumalanga and Northern Cape in terms of oversight. As we look at this proposed program, we must take into consideration that of the commitment that we made as a committee. So I'm suggesting that we start by looking at the program. I will request Marcel to go through the program, then we'll discuss the program and approve it, then we'll look at the minutes. Marcel, can you take us through the program?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, members. Excuse me. The program is based on an outline that we received from the House Chairperson's office on Monday. So what they have proposed is that the week of 24 January to the 8th of February, allocation has been made for members training, NCLP members training. There is a committee week that has been slotted, and from that week, I propose that the Indonesia study tour go ahead. I think it will give the embassies on the other side enough time if they also have their Christmas break. I don't exactly know when they open, so I thought that would afford them enough time to arrange our program for us. This week was inserted by the Office of the House Chair, so that is a week that the committee is allowed to travel. Then Thursday the 9th is the State of the Nation. Then we've got a meeting for the 14th of February. I've slotted the Department of Health. We haven't seen them for the annual report. Tuesday the 21st, the Department of Home Affairs. Home Affairs has not tabled their annual report, so we can't see Home Affairs to discuss the annual report. So they have been slotted for the 21st of February. There's a budget speech on the 22nd of February. The following Tuesday, the 2 days, Tuesday and Wednesday, there's an NCLP strategic planning review session that will review the balance of the 5 years of the term that members have stepped into. Tuesday the 7th of March, the briefing with the Department of Water on the annual report. I am in contact with Shawkey. The department is not available to meet with us, so this will only happen in the new year. Tuesday the 14th, we have had a request by a NGO, Fast Facts, to brief the committee on the work that they're doing with fetal alcohol syndrome, and I thought we could talk about that. Then Tuesday the 21st of March, it's Human Rights Day, which is a public holiday. And then there is an opening for an oversight at the end of the term, and that's where we've slotted Malanga. Thank you, Chippers.
That lives out in Northern Cape. Can I have input from members? Honorable Kaula.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. My first one is on the first page, the 14th of February. I just want to find out if we do have clarity as to what time the sitting will be starting on that day, the debate on the President's address. If we can clarify that one before we commit ourselves to it. And then the budget speech on the 22nd of February, which is not an NCOP program. Why is it here? Because it's an NA item. It's not an NCOP item. Thanks.
Okay, other inputs? Members? Honorable Zwane?
just to add on what Agape is saying, or just to emphasize the thing. The 22nd of February is a Wednesday. It's not a day during which social services normally sits in any case, although it is a budget speech day. And up to now, we don't know if it will really be affecting the NCOP, not unless at the level of WIPAR, we now are part of the budget speech day.
Because we do have the 21st, which is on Tuesday, annual report. I had requested Marcel to check because next week we are here, and the following week.
No.
Only next week?
Yes.
Until the 9th?
Sure.
Yeah. Can't we put one department?
If they're available.
No, I wanted to know why is Water said they can't see us. No, it can't be. Okay, she is saying they can't see us because they're busy with the portfolio committee.
On which day, Chairperson?
No, but we are not only left with water and sanitation. Health. Okay, all what I'm proposing, all members, that next week if we're here, let's get one department. We are far behind schedule. And also I want members to speak on the issue of Northern Cape. If we move, we had said to Mpumalanga we are coming in January. Remember, Marcel, when we said go back and look at the international tour, you had said with Tabile you can put both of them early next year. If we put Mpumalanga in March, meaning that Northern Cape is not going to be covered, what is happening that first week? The very first week of January. Is that training?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's actually a 2-week training, so members will only do the 1 week and the following week will be the study training.
Training us on what?
You know that so petrol exists, I that you always think. Well, relating to the beginning of January, Chairperson, I would request that maybe before Marcel finalizes anything, let us have a talk between you and me. Because there are issues that might arise as a result of metric results that we may have to pay focus attention to. So I would request that before she finalizes, let us have a talk around that issue.
No, I don't think it's a problem because anyway, you once raised it that we must reserve time for metric results.
Mm.
Okay, it shouldn't be a problem. But all what we want to what we are saying, we committed. You remember there was a very heated debate.
Yes, yes.
So we can't be leaving Northern Cape out.
Yeah.
Northern Cape has to be covered this this financial year. Well, members, can I propose that we note the program?
Mm-hmm.
I go back with Marcel, see if we can put Northern Cape
somewhere.
If we can, we'll put it and sign the program. But if we can't, or still, I'll sign the program as is, removing the 22nd. Can we agree on that?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Can we then consider the minutes of the previous meeting? Honorable Samga?
Fell up our program. Sizi committee ezimbini ezinochairperson ababili. Kunokuba ize iprogramu apha sizoyixoxa singakhange sihlale ezikomiti ezimbini okanye usekretari. Kutheni singakhe sibavumele bakhe bawujonga into yokokuba ime kanjani ipalamente kwii-programs then baze ne-clear program for the two committees than to discuss i-programs in this kule meeting ku meeting eku elolusoko andazi uba ndivakala nasihlala. We have two secretary committee coordinators here. Committee secretaries, you can call it committee coordinators, ne? I don't know whether you call it a committee coordinator or secretaries. Why we don't allow them to go back and sit and look at the program of the next year so that they come up with a clear program of action for the next year for the two committees. As Honorable Uzwane was talking about the metric results, because we are sharing the one membership in this committee. Why don't you go? They go back. That was my thinking.
No, you are correct, but you remember that usually we are under the assumption that they did meet. Usually they do that before they bring it here. This is a formal sitting for social services. Tomorrow we'll receive a program Yaga education. All of us will be here. Usually they both look at the programs but submit in a formal meeting of a committee so that it is adopted. It's easy when we have a workshop because in that case we are able to adopt both program in one meeting. But when it comes like this, because just one quarter, they sit down, look at the program, but bring it in an official meeting of a committee. I'm not sure, but I know tomorrow we might be having one for education. We'll go the same process, but we're under the assumption that they met before they brought it here. But you are correct that we are one membership. Okay, can we look at the minutes? We have three sets of minutes that we have not, four sets of minutes that we have not adopted. The first one is on the 16th of August. Did members receive the minutes before? You have? But she usually send them. Okay, the 16th of August is only one page. Is it one page? I have one page. Oh. Okay. Okay, I take them as read by members. Is there anything that we want to add or change on page one? Page 2. Can I have a mover for adoption? Honorable Mampul moves for adoption. Honorable Samka seconds. Thank you very much. The second set is the 20th of September 2015. Anything on page 1? Page 2. Page 3. Page 2 is on.
Page 2,
sir.
Yes. Item number 2.
Item number 2.
I think that briefing was by Mr. Shozi, not Shozi.
Shozi.
Shozi, Kapis.
Shozi.
Z-I, not Z-A. Shozi.
You see, this one. Page 2. This one. No, it's the other side. Oh, you have it. Oh, yeah. Okay. Can I have a mover?
Move.
Honorable Zwane is moving for adoption. Honorable Buru seconds. The third set is the 8th of November, 2016. Anything on page 1? Yes, ma'am.
I didn't see my name. I was not apologizing here. I was not in the present in the meeting. Marcel, can you assist me? On the 8th of November. My name is not appearing present. My name is not appearing. Apologies. The 8th of November. Without apology, even I was absent, Chairperson. I don't think so. But I'll check.
Do members still remember what we said about apology? Did we say it has to be in writing?
Mm-hmm.
We said it has to be in writing. Yeah, that is what we said that when we had the problem of Honorable Mathis. We then said an apology must be in writing. Okay. Page anything on page 2? Page 3? Page 4? Can I have a mover? Honorable Chris is moving. Honorable Mamburu is seconding. And the last one is 22nd November 2016. On page 1? Anything on page 1? Page 2? Page 3? Can I have a mover? Honorable Tandy is moving, seconded by Honorable Shodi. Those are the minutes.
It can't be out of Mushuri seconded in the minutes. She was not part of the minutes.
Then there was Honorable Zwane. Thank you, Honorable Zwane. Those are the minutes of the previous meetings. All members, you're supposed to receive the Department of Human Settlement. They are not yet here. They are on their way. All of them are not here. Department. Okay. We're starting with them at 1:30, honourable members. Department of Human Settlement. Yeah, 1:30. Yeah. Second session of our meeting, getting an annual report from the Department of Human Settlement. I was checking with them how long it will take them. They are saying it's a short presentation, very short. We've agreed that they will give them 20 minutes to do the presentation, then we'll interact with the report once it is presented. The disadvantage that we have, DG, let me first welcome you. I am told, I don't have any apologies, honourable members, both from the minister and the DM, but I'm told that, thank you so much, I'm told that the DM was supposed to be part of this. Maybe because of the meetings that they have, she might be still caught up in a meeting because they themselves have split themselves. Some of them are with the portfolio committee. Some of them decided to come to this meeting, which we really appreciate because we're under pressure in terms of time. want to welcome you DG, and give it to you, hand it over to you to give us a presentation on the report. I don't know how you have structures who will be doing a presentation. You will guide us in terms of the presentation. But honourable members, I just want to congratulate the department on the Governor Mbeki Awards. What a good event. Yo, what a good event. You see, with this department is very much, I don't know whether it's because it's tangible delivery that we see. It looks like they are really making us proud. The houses that we saw, and also maybe one officially take this opportunity to officially congratulate all the provinces, contractors and service providers who got the awards. They deserve it. I was saying to Mpumalanga people when they were saying, no, we're up, and I will ask them, do we have these units in the province? They will say no. No, I think right people got the awards. They are making us proud. I want to congratulate you again on the awards. Very professional, well organized. I must say we're proud of you and the houses that we saw. Not forgetting about the shoddy work that is being done by some of the contractors, but it cannot overshadow the good work that is done by the department. We congratulate you on the awards. Let me hand over to you, DG, to take us through the presentation on the annual. Honorable Zane?
Except that we would like to know, Chairperson, where did you see the good units, the quality units, in which province?
It's different provinces that got the awards. Oh, yeah, you want me to talk about KwaZulu-Natal? Oh, my goodness. Because you scoop most of the awards. And very interesting, Eastern Cape. In the morning of that day, during the day, I attended MINMEC. In MINMEC, it became clear that Eastern Cape cannot proceed with building of the houses. They've exhausted their budget. I was very much angry during the day, DG, I must tell you. It's just that that meeting was not my meeting. But I was sitting there very angry. Why will they exhaust their money? But when you saw the way they got the awards, then you could see where the money went to. We're not condoning that, because they must do it within their allocated budget. But the awards told a story. Even though we've been to Alfred Nzo, DG, I still have a list of requests from the different wards there. I don't know. I saw some houses. I don't know where are these much houses they're talking about, Alfred Nzo, because even when we had a briefing with Alfred Nzo, they were complaining about houses. I think we need to talk about that. But the good work is done. Is being done in the Eastern Cape, Honorable Samka. A number of awards went to Eastern Cape and other provinces. I think there's no province that did not get an award. All provinces got an award. But beautiful units as one in your province. Yeah. Okay, DG.
Maybe andiko happy on the Apollo chambers. Tambu DG Uza Choindoba. Where is the minister? Although there is no return apology or at the in front of you. This is an annual report the department is going to give to us. We need a political overview of the minister or the deputy minister before the DG of the department can present to us an annual report. But I'm worried, but maybe the DG will explain where is the deputy minister. I don't understand. I'm not happy. I don't know about. sihlalo ndifuna ngaske aqale akathi uba uphi singezi ngawe because yena usuka kwi-department akasixele uba baphi bobabini because today it's Tuesday it's not Wednesday. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Baphi.
Thank you, Chair. Let me respond to the last question directly. We are experiencing a clash. There are two sessions that are running parallel right now as we speak. And the minister was with me in the other portfolio committee. I had to leave halfway because there are two items there that are serving in the PC. It's the report on UN Habitat 3. We were summoned to come and present the resolutions of Ecuador. We went to Ecuador, which is your UN Habitat 3 conference, which happens after every 20 years. Sorry. The second part of that is the DFI consolidation. That is the formation of the new Human Settlements Development Bank. And both items are items that are supposed to be presented by either myself or minister. I then ask a request from the other portfolio that whilst minister is continuing with that presentation, then let me come this side because I am an accounting officer and the annual report is my performance agreement. It's about my performance agreement. So instead of keeping the members of the portfolio committee waiting this side, I decided to be excused with the CFO because what features very prominently in any annual report is the financial statements. So I just thought that myself and the CFO can come this side once minister is continuing on that side. So we didn't know how to manage the clash. So it was my recommendation that we come here. The deputy minister was going to join us here. I was made that she was going to join us, but I can still find out whether she's coming to join us or not. But minister was going to attend both, but the problem is time management.
There you are, all members. Can I proceed? Okay. DG, let's proceed.
Thank you, Chair. We welcome the compliments on the Gavin Mbeki Awards, and I must state up front that the two provinces that have been performing consistently for the last 3 years is KZN and Eastern Cape. And the reason why KZN did far much better than any other province, and it was voted as the best performing and the best managed department is because they have mastered the art of managing the budget, managing the unit costs, and managing the cash flow. And they have given us the volumes as well. Eastern Cape used to master the art of doing all of these things. I think they started slipping last year, and that's why they have overcommitted by almost more than 30%. And once you overcommit, then you will get accruals. And once you have accruals, then the value of your grant diminishes, and then it's going to be extremely difficult for you to pay the contractors. And I think that's the problem that Eastern Cape is faced with now, that their cash flow is getting smaller and smaller, and they're finding it extremely difficult to manage their cash flow, unlike KZN. So if you look at KZN and you compare it with any other province, they have been overperforming and over-exceeding their targets, but also managing the cash flow and also paying the contractors. I thought you saw it during the day, that there was only one invoice that KZN has not paid to date, unlike other provinces where they have more than 200, more than 60, more than 50 invoices that they have not paid, which are more than 30 million rands. KZN's single invoice is about 300,000, and that is a disputed invoice, which they will be able to sort out. So we thought our awarding of KZN as the best performing province speaks for itself, and we can defend it. Chair, without wasting your time, I want to go straight to the structure of today's presentation.
I will be assisted by Mr. Funaneng Mahlatsi, who is our CFO, and Nomfundo Nozikwaba, who is managing our strategic planning unit. She's the one who holds us accountable internally when we are not performing. So the two of them will be assisting me. The presentation is structured in this manner. We will have an overview of the departmental performance, which is just a summary. Then we'll have the progress on qualitative outputs. We're not just chasing the numbers, but we'll also look at the qualitative indicators. We will also touch on the medium-term strategic framework, the MTSF, and look at sector performance over the five-year period. We will look at the grant expenditure report, how the grant has performed, both grants. It's the Human Settlements Development Grant and the Urban Settlements Development Grant, which goes to the metros. We will look at financial matters. The CFO will lead us there. She will also touch on the audit outcomes. Remember, the AG has raised a number of issues, and they have asked us to attend to those issues. And the CFO will deal with those issues, and that will conclude our presentation. If you look at the overall performance, we have achieved 76% of what we contracted to do in the beginning of the year. And we partially achieved 19% of some of the targets. And when we say partially achieved, we mean at the end of the financial year, there were still outstanding issues that were not achieved. I'll give you one practical example. If the intention was to pass a policy, and minister has not signed on that policy, even though it has gone to MINMEC and there are some drafts, it means that that particular target is partially achieved. It has not been 100% achieved. But we recognize the work that has been done before the end of the financial year. Then 5% of the targets that we contracted to achieve in the last financial year were not achieved. We'll come back to the nature of those targets. You can explain it in numbers as well, because sometimes they say percentages are deceiving. We can talk about the specific numbers. We have listed them there at the top. On the qualitative side of our targets, we started the year with one intention: to consolidate our DFIs. It's the presentation that we're making right now on the Portfolio Committee on Human Settlements. The consolidation of the DFIs includes NURTURE, which is one of our development finance institutions. Its money, it has always been to fund emerging contractors. We have RALF, the Rural Housing Loan Finance, the DFI. The bigger part of their mandate is to provide end-user finance to rural citizens. Then we have NHFC, the National Housing Finance Corporation, which is our biggest DFI. NHFC does what one would call end-to-end funding. They do fund indirectly as an intermediary end users, but they also do fund incremental finance. They fund social housing, rental housing. They do leveraging as well, using their own funding to raise more funds, their own budget to raise more funds. They've entered into an arrangement and partnership with the French Development Agency, FDA. In consolidating this DFI, there are quite a number of things that we needed to do. One of them is to seek a tax exemption, because NHFC is a profit entity, unlike the other two, which is RALF and NURTURE, which are not for profit. Now, if the two entities, because we amalgamated all of them into NHFC, which is the biggest, if they are going to donate their assets or they enter into a buy and sell agreement, it would have meant that those assets will have to go through a taxation process. They will have to be taxed. That donation will have to be subjected to the tax laws that we have in the country. So we then, together with National Treasury, we've been working throughout this process with National Treasury and the service providers that we have hired, we hired them through the GTEC component of Treasury to assist us. There were two options that we put on the table. One was to seek a special exemption, tax exemption, but we have to follow the entire process. The other option was to go to the tribunal, the Competition Tribunal, and ask for a special exemption without transferring NHFC into a not-for-profit entity. Because if we transfer NHFC into a not-for-profit entity, then we won't be taxed. But the question was, why do you want to transfer NHFC into a not-for-profit entity when the new bank will be a profit-making entity? So the board then passed a resolution that we must seek a special exemption without transferring the entity into a not-for-profit. The policy foundation for the creation of the DFI was developed. It is in place. It's been approved. We've got the draft business case. We also have the draft bill. We have draft number two as we speak on the bill, because the new Human Settlements Development Bank, which will be a new DFI, Human Settlements DFI, will have to be formed by an Act of Parliament. So we're working on that bill. It will be published for public comments, and if there's an opportunity to come and present it here, we will be more than willing to come and present it. But we're working on the draft right now as we speak. The other qualitative output, I will list some of them. I'm not going to go into details. It's the consultation process and the adoption, also which will inform the white paper. You know that as we speak, we have the housing white paper. The intention is to move to the human settlements white paper. The department is called Human Settlements, but most of the policies and legislation that we're using are informed by the Housing Act. So the end state of the white paper on human settlements will be a Human Settlements Act. So we're going through that process. We've done extensive consultation on this one. We've been to every province, every municipality, every stakeholder. Again, we are more than willing to come and share the status of the white paper with the committee. The revision of what is in the white paper, these are some of the things that will be informed or influenced by the white paper process. The beneficiary allocations policy. You will agree with me that this is one contested area in human settlements. And it talks to beneficiary allocation, housing allocation, what we used to call the waiting list. Others refer to it as the housing demand database. This is one area that we want to fix, and we're working with State SA, working with CETA on the technology side, because we want to make sure that the credibility of the housing allocation and beneficiary administration is enhanced. Revision of the preemptive clause on the sale of subsidies, houses, subsidized housing. The preemptive clause is Section 10 of the Housing Act. This is one clause which says once you've received a house from government, you are not allowed to sell that house at least for 8 years. It's called the preemptive rights clause. Now, this preemptive rights clause was introduced when government was the only deliverer of housing. It was introduced in 1997 when the Housing Act was passed. Now we have banks involved in this space. We have private funders involved in this space. We have development finance institutions like PIC and others involved in this space. And they are the ones who are investing more in the area of LISP, for instance, or in affordable housing. They take more risk. And the question that they are asking is, if government is not the major investor, why is government allowing this preemptive rights clause to be applicable in the affordable housing space? In other words, it simply means if you want to sell a house, government is not prohibiting the selling of the house by beneficiaries. But it says if you decide to sell that house in this 8-year period, government must have the first right of refusal. In other words, you must come to government first. So now the banks and other funders are playing in this space. They're saying Okay, that makes sense for BNG RDP houses because you're funding all of them 100%. But where government is making a 10% subsidy on a 600,000 rands house and the bank is the biggest investor, the question is, will that preemptive rights clause still be applicable? So we then discuss it with BASA, we discuss it with other DFIs, we discuss it with provinces, and we all agreed that we need to amend it because it talks to risk sharing between government and the private sector. But if in BNG, we will keep it as it is. So we'll try and be more specific. BNG, RDP, we don't make changes there. But if it's it's co-funding between government and the private sector, we will try and amend that clause. The team is working on that as we speak. I'm sorry for taking too long to explain it. It's a little bit complicated, and it's a big contentious issue in the sector right now. We will be reviewing the programs in the housing code. Remember, we still talk about the housing code. We should be talking about human settlements code. And if you look at the housing code, the Housing Act is one of the most prescriptive pieces of legislation. You are told how to upgrade informal settlements. It's in the housing code. You are told how to plan for the house, and even the cost related to that is prescribed. So the housing code is what we would call the doctrines of human settlements. This is how you're going to do it. And if you deviate, then there will be an audit issue. So we will be amending the housing code as part of the human settlements white paper. An investment framework to guard human settlements development was completed for consultation and adoption. We presented it to the DG's cluster. It's going to cabinet soon. But in the last financial year or the year under review, we could not conclude that process, but it was presented to MINMEC. So these are one of the partially achieved targets. This is about white paper, if you like, what we call the master special plan on human settlements. We don't want to build houses everywhere. We need to build houses in areas where we will be able to achieve economic integration. We will be able to achieve spatial integration and social integration. So that investment framework, which is managed by ourselves and the Housing Development Agency, will help us to invest wisely and also to target those areas where there's the greatest need, also those areas where there's the greatest deprivation. We can present, it is concluded, we can come here as well and present the Master Special Plan. It's already been approved by all the MECs and in MIMEC. We call it an investment guide or a master special plan. Another qualitative outputs that we achieved in the last financial year was to create what we call the business intelligence dashboard. And this dashboard was simply intended to enhance monitoring of projects. We can tell you at any given point in time the status of milestones in provinces. We can reconcile the non-financial targets with financial targets using that dashboard and interfacing it with HSS. The HSS is an old system that has been with us for a very long time, the housing subsidy system. It helps us to track payments. It helps us to track non-financial milestones. For instance, if you build a house, you have slabs, you have window pane milestones, and you have to pay every time you achieve a milestone. We have a wall plate, we have a roof, and the completion signed by NHBRC, we refer to them as FUR, finished units, reconciled by NHFC. So NHBRC. So we've got all of these milestones that we track. When a province is not performing, what we usually do, we look at the money spent vis-a-vis the milestones on the ground so that we can get a sense of whether the financial and non-financial indicators are talking to each other. Because we've seen instances where provinces have spent a lot of money, but you're not seeing the milestones, you're not seeing the units, you're not seeing the set aside. So what the system does, it helps us to do the reconciliation. You can do it monthly, you can do it quarterly, you can do it every 6 months, so that we are able to ask the question, where did the money go? We need to see whether the money is buying those things that we wanted to buy, because in the past, because of weak monitoring, money ended up buying things that were not in the business plans. We also have enhanced the NHBRC enrollment. You are aware, Chair, that every home builder in this country has to be registered with NHBRC. Home builder are the developers and contractors. By law, no one is allowed to build in our space if you are not registered with the NHBRC. Every project that we build has to be enrolled with NHBRC for warranty purposes. Every house that we build, it has to be a 5-year warranty has to be issued for that house, so that if there's anything that happens to that house in this 5-year period, we're able to activate the warranty fund to fix that house, because we do have a warranty fund in excess of more than 5 billion rands, which is administered by NHBRC. We also had a consumer education program. Chair, I'm sure you've heard some worrying stories about people selling houses for 10,000 rand, in some cases for 8,000. Someone wants to go and to bury a cousin or an uncle, and you don't have money, they sell the house, and then they come back and they go back straight into an informal settlement, or they go back to a backyard. What we've tried to do here is to aggressively enhance our consumer education program so that people get to understand that the house is an asset which will appreciate over time. Some of the houses that we have built, each house cost us about 160,000 rands. It's 110,000 for the top structure, and it's about 47,000 for the service side. And that house, some of these houses, we've done a lot of assessment of the value of the houses. I'm sure you've seen some of them in the newspapers, especially those that have been there for more than 8 years. And they are all going at about 300,000, anything above 250,000. You got that house for free, and if you sell it properly in the market, in the property market, you get more than 300,000. So we tried to aggressively educate communities not to sell the houses in the black market, because if they sell the houses in the black market, they lose. Even the buyers themselves, they lose, because that transaction is illegal. Another qualitative output, Chair, I'm not going to spend time on this one. It's our intervention in Nelson Mandela Bay Metro. We've packaged a program. We refer to it as Inter-Spherical Program. Before we intervene to support any municipality or any metro, in most cases it's metros because we are administering a budget of 12 billion rands in the metros, we will get the minister, we'll get the mayor of that municipality, and we'll get the MEC of that province to sign what we call the M3 agreement, which is a memorandum of agreement, memorandum of understanding. They have to sign that agreement to allow us to get into the metro and support the metro. The mayor will take the agreement and the intervention package and present it to the council, and the council will adopt it. We did exactly the same in Nelson Mandela Bay Metro. We have managed to work with the metro, to work with the province, to work with HDA and the National Department of Human Settlements to stabilize procurement issues within Nelson Mandela Bay Metro. As we speak, we have about 88 contractors on site in Nelson Mandela Bay Metro. We started that process in June last year. It was adopted unanimously by the council. Most of those 88 contractors are emerging contractors. They're not established contractors. And they have been working very well. The only snag, Chair, and I need to flag this, is that we worried about the cash flow in Eastern Cape. And if that process is not managed, as Minmike made the resolution last week, if that process is not managed, it's going to affect the cash flow of these 88 contractors. We were given a clear instruction by Minmec, myself, and the AGOD to fix that problem. And I'm also talking to National Treasury, the DG, to assist us, because my fear is that if we disperse the money to the province, chances are it may not go where it's intended to go. So we want to look at other options so that the emerging contractors don't suffer because of poor cash flow management. And remember, for small contractors, cash is king. They go and ask for material supply. They have creditors. So if you don't pay them on time, they don't make profit. So we've raised that issue, and that's, I'm flagging it here so that if it comes out, it's an issue. At least you are aware about it. A training, support, and incubation program of youth and women implemented by the department with NHPRC, AAB, and HDA was done during the year under review. And this covers 200 youth brigades, or 200 youth who were trained by NHPRC. 90 of them were trained as plumbers and artisans by NHPRC, and they were given a certificate by the Deputy Minister in August this year. We continue to run that program because that's our contribution into skilling young people so that they can take care of themselves. Plumbing is one area that is extremely expensive. It doesn't matter where you stay. You pay your fortune for plumbing, and we feel that this is where some of the young people can establish their own businesses. As they say, you don't give them a fish, you give them a rod so that they can fish for themselves. So we've trained a lot of people, and every year there's an intake of about 200. The CFO has been complaining about the budget in that regard because we don't have all the budget in the world, and we've been cut by almost 48 million rands. Our operational budget has been reduced significantly. We're not complaining, Chair. The other departments are affected. Human Settlements is not the only department that has been affected by the cuts. Every department has been affected. Implementation guidelines of PHPs, they were tabled for approval. The strategy for human settlements in mining towns was also developed together with the presidents. We developed that strategy with DPME, and it was presented to the IMC for mining towns. The revision of the guidelines for human settlements development, this was also done in the last financial year. The last bullet, Chair, is of significance to you because it talks to the accreditation framework. We picked it up that accreditation has always been treated in the past. I think we didn't package it properly as a box-ticking exercise. When we started linking it to performance, the performance of metros and municipalities, it became very clear that it's going to be extremely difficult for some of the municipalities to meet the requirement. So we're working on it. All the metros are accredited to level 2. All what they are asking for now is to be assigned. Minister met with all the mayors last year, and we have agreed on the new framework, the new accreditation framework, which is what we are working on now. But that accreditation framework, Chair, is linked to the mega projects that we are delivering. We don't want to accredit for the sake of accrediting. You want to build capacity by doing. You build the capacity of the municipality or the metro by implementing programs and projects. Then you can bring in engineers, you can bring in professionals so that you build that capacity of the metro. And when that program is implemented successfully, we're able to say this metro can be assigned. They're all accredited, but they have not been assigned. Assignment means they start performing like provinces. In other words, they can be treated and be categorized as fully fledged human settlements entities. So that exercise is underway. I'm going to move a little bit with speed now. This is the MTSF targets, our five-year targets. To date, Chair, we have upgraded 170,288 households in informal settlements. Now then the question will be against what? I'll come back to the exact five-year figure. I need to state upfront that we have not been doing well in this area of informal settlements upgrading. Provinces are performing far much better than municipalities in terms of informal settlements upgrading. The metros, there are only two metros that are doing very well right now in terms of informal settlements upgrading targets. I think it's KZN and Nelson Mandela Bay Metro. All the other metros are struggling to meet the target. So it's a Tekwini and the Nelson Mandela Metro. At a provincial level, Eastern Cape, again, with KZN, they're doing far much better. Mangaung is sitting at Amber. They're not doing bad in terms of meeting their informal settlements upgrading targets. We have, in terms of catalytic projects, you'll recall that we've been talking a lot about catalytic projects. We've assessed 101 catalytic projects in this year, in the year under review. Out of those 101 catalytic projects, 46 are public catalytic projects. These are catalytic mega projects that were initiated by government. The rest, about 56 of them, they come from the private sector. These are the ones where we will be crowding in private sector investment. The rest, they are driven by government. In terms of loan finance, by our DFIs, we have issued 126,278 loans in the year under review, which I, even though, Chair, that figure looks very small, I think we need to take into account the fact that the economy is not doing very well. And the market that we are dealing with is a highly indebted market. We're targeting people who earn between 3,000 to 15,000. And this is a group that is extremely indebted, highly indebted. The only thing that worries us is the behavior of the credit market in this space, because some of the credits that they have easy access to are not the kind of credits that one would want to encourage. There's easy access to furniture stores, easy access, and people think that they are buying furniture, only to find that they are having access to a credit. Easy access to DSTV, easy access to cars, all of those things. We would encourage through our consumer education that we educate our clients to focus more on mortgage, to focus more on real assets, not credits that are not going to generate wealth. And that is part of our consumer education, Chair. We've done assessments, pre-assessment for accreditation on three municipalities. Like I said, this program was put on hold by MINMEC so that we can come up with a different approach on how we're going to manage it going forward. 463 feasibilities in informal settlements were completed. Remember, before we build in any informal settlements, we have to count the dwellings, we have to do geotech assessment, and ask ourselves questions like, is this informal settlement upgradable where it is? What are the soil conditions? Are they dolomitic? We do all of that work upfront before we get to do the capital aspect of informal settlements upgrading. So we've done 463 feasibilities last year. Various provincial PHPs initiatives yielded 8,498. The biggest of all the PHPs is the Vulindlela PHP in Mgungundlu, in Marisbeck, Msunduzi. That's the biggest PHP with 25,000 units. I think they've done plus 12,000 units already. Again, on our mid-term strategic framework targets, our five-year targets, the affordable rental target or program has not been performing well. It has not been performing well for a number of reasons. One is we had to stabilize the regulator, in this case the Social Housing Regulatory Authority. I can confirm it here, Chair. The last time we came here, we were still fixing things at SHRA. I can confirm it now that we have a fully functioning board. We have a CEO, one of the most experienced specialists in the industry. He is running that organization. We do have a pipeline of projects. All what we were waiting for is for some few enhancements on the policy side to be done by Minister and MINMEC. One of them is changing the income band from the upper threshold, as we speak, is 9,000, and we want to move it to 15,000. Also changing the subsidy quantum for the restructuring capital grant. Right now, as we speak, the unit, the quantum, the subsidy quantum is 125 for every rental social housing stock that we deliver. We have 125. We want to move it to 155. It has never been moved since 2008. And we are of the view that if we want to make these projects viable and sustainable, we have to review the subsidy quantum. We also wanted to amalgamate the CRU, what we used to call the Hostel Redevelopment Program. Now it's called Community Residential Unit Program. We wanted to integrate it with social housing. That is still work under review. We didn't meet that target in the last financial year. In this space, again, of affordable rental, through NHFC, we've issued 6,565 loans. Remember, the top-up on every rental unit that we build, that top-up is done by NHFC. and other private funders. But in the last year, it was only NHFC which made a significant contribution. Now, this is repeating what I've just said, but now the question is against which targets? We contracted in 2014 when we started this term of government that in this current term of government will upgrade 745,000 households. That's what we said. And then the annual target in the year under review was 149,000. Last year, 249,000 households. We'll upgrade 149,000 households in informal settlements. I need to state that the upgrading is not to a house. The upgrading is to a basic level of service. In other words, there must be water, there must be sanitation, there must be electricity, there must be refuse removal in that particular informal settlement. So we targeted to achieve 149, we achieved 112,000. But for the 5-year period, we're sitting at 232. This figure may change when we come back here. We've also taken a decision last week at MINMEC to review the baselines, because we were of the view, and we presented this to cabinet as well, that there isn't a single informal settlement in this country that has no services. All informal settlements have services. The problem is the level of service, the degree of service. In some cases, you have 12 households being serviced by one sanitation point. In some cases, you have one water standpipe servicing 500. So it is the level of service and the degree of service that is problematic. And if that's the case, if one sanitation point is servicing 20 or 25, then the sustainability of that service is not going to last for too long, because it can't carry with it the volumes. And that is why you'll find that in most informal settlements, some of the chemical toilets are not functioning optimally because they are servicing the volumes and they are not maintained properly. So these are the 5-year targets, the annual targets, 750,000 households in informal settlements upgraded, 745 households living in adequate housing through the subsidy and affordable housing segment, and then we have 563,000 individual units for subsidy housing submarket. These are all the targets for 5 years. The first column on the left, these are targets for 5 years that we must achieve in the 5-year period. I must say that we have been moving very slow. We're sitting at 30-35% of that 5-year target, and we are halfway now. In December, we have 2.5 years to go before the end of the term. But we're still very optimistic that the target is achievable. We're still very positive. We started very slow. I think the metros have not been performing optimally. If you look at the figures, you will see that it's metros that have been pulling us down. And the majority of informal settlements are in the metros. So we want the metros at least to spend 50% of the USDG grant on informal settlements. Title D's program also is not performing optimally. It's moving, but here it's like we're chasing a moving target.
DG, can I interrupt you?
Yes.
I'm just looking at our time. You have, in fact, almost 30 minutes.
Okay.
But we are still left with over 30 slides.
We will skip the next. This is, I have summarized these ones. I'm going to skip and then go straight into the financial section.
Okay, because I think the most important part, the MTSF is very important, but for this purpose, it's more on your APP.
Yes.
Yeah. We have not reached that area now. You see, that is my worry now. I don't know how you want to summarize it, but not losing anything, because that is our focus.
Okay.
Yeah.
We will make sure that at least we cover the financial and the non-financial aspect of our work. We won't dwell on MTSF. The only reason why we're spending time on MTSF is that there's a relationship between your annual performance and your 5-year performance. So we just wanted you to see how we're doing to reach the 5-year target. I would request that we move straight to what is in the APP, which is your annual performance figures. And that would be, I'll start with the non-financials by provinces. We started the year to deliver 167,846 opportunities. We define the opportunities into two categories. It's 63,866 sites and 103 housing units. So that's what we conducted to do in our IPP as a sector collectively, beginning of the year. What we actually achieved was 152,000 housing opportunities, which means we completed 100,000 units, houses in the last financial year, 100,904, and we delivered 51,349 sites. And you can see which provinces did well. Eastern Cape did well. KZN, they did well. I don't know if you have that slide. I don't want to lose you. It's a slide that says delivery for April 2015, March 2016. Do you have the page? Page 16. I'm simply giving you the summary. I'm not going to break it down by every province because we won't have time. Yeah, the very first one. So we contracted to deliver 167,000. We achieved 152,000. It's still better than last year. In the last financial year, we achieved 143,000. But the provinces that didn't perform well, that have pulled us down, the only two of those provinces that pulled everyone down is Gauteng and Limpopo. They didn't do well in the last financial year. And that is why we fell short of the 167,000 that we targeted to achieve. You would have noticed that last year we moved funds from Gauteng to other provinces that were performing, and KZN and Eastern Cape were benefiting provinces. This year, I can confidently say that Limpopo is out of the woods. They're doing very well. They're doing far much better than any other department. We intervened in Limpopo, even though they ended up taking, poaching one of our officials, but things are working well for all of us. You can see, if you look at the next slide, which provinces did well, which provinces didn't do well. I'm not going to spend time on that. The same applies if you look at the grant, the performance of the grant. All the provinces have spent the grant. I will move straight to the slide which talks about the, because this is important, it's in the audit. It says audit improvements on the HSS data. By law, every province is expected to report every unit and every cent that they spend on the HSS. They have to be compliant with the HSS. We've been struggling for a very long time to get provinces to comply 100% with the housing subsidy system. Why this is important? This is a control system. This is extremely important for audit purposes. It's extremely important for expenditure purposes. Now, you would have noticed that almost all the provinces do comply with HSS, with the exception of Eastern Cape. Even in Eastern Cape, the deviation is very small. There was 97% compliance and 98% compliance. And we can live with that one because we know which projects were not enrolled properly. But overall, the compliance issues in terms of housing delivery and housing construction has improved in all the provinces across the board. I'm going to move with speed and go straight to the comment about the partially achieved targets, because these are targets that are in the APP. The DFI consolidation, I've already captured this. The in-year targets on the issuance of title deeds, some of these targets were not approved. The drafting of the policy for coherent and inclusive approach to land and regulations. Towards the end of the financial year, we have presented to all the structures, but it was not approved. The approval is when the minister has signed on it and said, I'm satisfied. So all of these targets were partially approved, were partially achieved. The evaluation of access to the city, evaluation was cancelled due to non-performance by the service provider, so that target was not done. But all the other evaluations were achieved, evaluation on informal settlements, upgrading, and again, we can present all of those evaluations. Remember, by law, we have to do these evaluations on the expenditure and evaluations on the programs that we implement. Again, accreditation, I've touched on it. Informal settlements upgrading, again, that target was partially achieved. We have not been performing very well there. Targets that were not achieved, the biannual reports on property trends was not disseminated. Work was done, but that information was not presented to MINMEC. It was not disseminated to the clients. The capacity building program in Program 3 was not implemented. And this capacity building is about informal settlements upgrading, because we want municipalities to do it for themselves going forward. Chair, I'm going to hand over to the CFO to take us through the expenditure, the performance of the grant, the financial aspect of our APP.
Thank you very much, Gigi. Honorable Chair, honorable members, I will not dwell much on the reasons for underspending, particularly on the grants and some of the APP. The DG has touched mostly on those. But Chair, I must indicate that we've closed the year of 2015-16 by a budget of 13.5 billion adjusted, as a final allocation with the environment and shifting of funds between. And at that time, one could just as well indicate the aggregate spending was at 30 billion. That left the department with an underspending of 508 million. And if one looks at backwards to what the DG has indicated in terms of the provinces of which we shall go into, we're looking mostly at the correlation between what has been achieved by provinces and what the expenditure in relation to the grant has performed. And that percentage, you will see, Chairperson, it's more or less the same. But for this particular exercise is the fact that the 508 million was not affected by the grants. It was affected by the fact that you have varying items that could not spend on budget, and particularly the operational budget of the department. And in mostly, it varies from the goods and services, the personal compensation, the issue of the subsidies that we could not transfer to the Social Housing Regulator Authority, and I think we'll touch that. But I must emphasize the fact that the DG has indicated one of the most of the reasons why SHRA was not stagnant at that time, and to date we are comfortable with the Social Housing Regulator Authority with the stability that it has. But that challenge that we had in the past previous financial year enabled SHRA not to request the funding for us to be transferred back to them. So we were affected mostly by those issues, and a sum of 400 million could not be transferred to SHRA as we speak. But I must say that in terms of our operational budget, I think there were two major issues that made us not to achieve within the 508 million. Is the fact that during the year, our special investigation unit, at the point of closing the financial year, there were still some processes that needed to be undertaken in as far as the procurement is concerned, and some of the investigations were still continuing. So some of the invoices could not come on time. So we could not spend much on the issues of the SIU, which affected the budget of the operation of the department. The personnel cost was affected because we could not fill all the posts, Chairperson, given the fact that most of the budgets were cut, including the personnel cost. So we did not have that certainty of whether we fill the post and then we'll be able to sustain them as the year progresses. So we were cautioned in terms of filling the vacancies, but we've started the process, given the fact that we have concluded to say we fill the vacant posts on a contract basis, given the budget that has been cut. But the other one is the fact that during our engagement with CEDA, we could not come into terms with CEDA, but that affected our budget. And I must indicate, Chair, to the House that most of the money were requested for a rollover. But unfortunately, Chair, not all of it was approved, given the fact that the fiscus on its own is tight and Treasurer was looking at all costs with those monies that we could surrender as departments, including other departments, and we happened to be one of the victims. But I must indicate that of that amount, 17.5 was approved as a rollover, and that was relating to the payment or the procurement of the switches, because we've got different buildings that we needed to migrate to one building from another, and the purchasing of the new Microsoft switches for us to accommodate all our novel needs in terms of the department. Chair, and I think I'll skip some of the slides, DG, which will be the second flight, although we are indicating that as a department, 98% of our money was spent, only that 508, which comprises of 2%. The transfer payments, DG, if you can move to that slide, suggest to say that, that's right, yes. Where DG had indicated the challenges that we had with SHRA, including the fact that at that time the pipeline projects were not ready. The amount of 41.4 investment, as well as the 323 for the restructuring capital grants, which works closely in line with the provinces in terms of the social housing. We could not.
That's slide 28.
My apologies. I'll speak to the number of slides. Yeah, DG. We could not transfer it due to the number of reasons as indicated by the DG. The other transfer payments that we could not effect was the fact that HDA requested the drawdown very late towards the end of the financial year, and at that time the system was very bogged down with many payments. We could not, and it would have anyway not been spent by the HDA, by the entity, because the year was closing for all the entities as well. If I could move members to the HSDG, which is your Human Settlement Development Grant, which funds, which is number slide 29, it funds the development of houses, the development of service sites, as the DG had indicated, in provinces. So this is the grant that we transfer to the provinces. And if you can look at the very same slide, it has number of columns. And the first column indicates the voted funds of 18.2 billion, varying from 380 million of the Northern Cape to the highest of Gauteng, which is 4.9 billion. But within the very same breath, we had reallocated funds, we had adjustments during the year, and we had rollovers of Limpopo and Mpumalanga because they could not spend these funds in the previous financial year. But if one looks at the entire budget that provinces had to spend by the 31st of March 2016, was amounting to 18.6 billion. And of that amount, without singling out some of the provinces, but I will speak to Gauteng and Limpopo because DG has touched on it, is the fact that the total budget that has been transferred to the metros was 18.3. You will realize that has been increased by the fact that we had an adjustment of 100 million from the operational budget to Eastern Cape, for specifically for the Nelson Mandela projects that were undertaken during the intervention and through the intervention. But I must go back, Chairperson, to say that because of Gauteng and Limpopo having not performed very well in terms of the spending as well as the performance of the project, 908 million was taken away from Gauteng, and it was spread evenly among four provinces. Eastern Cape benefited by 400 million. Then we had KZN that had also performed very well in the previous, receiving 308 of that. Then we had your Northern Cape and Northwest having received 100 respectively. And most of these provinces had spent the amount that was transferred to them, given the fact that the 908 was taken away from Gauteng. But then on its own, we had Limpopo not performing in the past, but if we are to come back and provide the third quarter report, the situation would be different in as far as Limpopo. The chairperson has seen it as we were presenting the report to MINMEC last week Thursday. So the situation has since improved, and I think the performance is moving. But the rest of the slides, through your permission, DG, it talks to some of the activities that do not yield new opportunities, Chair. But I think what we could indicate here is that while they do not yield new opportunities, because it's issues of your ops gap, it's issues of rectification, it's issues of the hectares of land that we procure, it's money that has been invested in those milestones. We show this slide for the fact that if we do not have them being shown, one would actually assume that the 18.2 billion is not credibly spent. So we segregate these against the targets and services that we had achieved. But I think at the end of the day, it consumes part of the budget. And in mostly, one could indicate that it's 3 billion of the 18.2 that goes to those items that are not yielding new opportunities. But in terms of the business plan, we have to budget for them. We have to achieve those targets. And if one looks further into that, in Chief DG, if you can move to the one that talks to the upgrading of informal settlements in mining towns, that's the slide 31 and 32. In this, we're trying to indicate that because this is a target that we've actually focused as a human settlement department, it's proper for us to indicate that how much budget has been invested in mining towns per provinces. And you will have your Free State with those kinds of projects in terms of your Machabing, having had units of 780, and I'll just touch on it. But then there were funds that were allocated to that. Units of 1.3 have been achieved, so there was much progress in as far as the program is concerned. We didn't achieve anything from Gauteng, and this was affected by the fact that there was no progress and the plan was not credible, and hence Gauteng did not achieve in terms of the mining town. But I think in terms of Limpopo, it being high in terms of the mining towns, and they were spread evenly in terms of your Greater Thubatse, Elias Motsoaledi, and Tshilo-Vita-Khomo. But then there was progress in terms of that, so in contrast to the services that we wanted to see and the top structures. Hence, the money was not spent highly on your top structures. If you move further, there's much improvement in as far as Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, and Northwest is concerned. So most of these projects were targeted by the provinces. And if one looks at the Northwest, this was one of the highest issue in terms of our Rustenburg. And when we looked at it, there was great improvement and there was great achievements in terms of the upgrading of informal settlements in those mining towns. So we were very much comfortable with the mining towns and the upgrading of informal settlements in those areas. Chairperson, as far as the focusing of the budget is concerned, the finance link individual subsidy as well as your rectification program also forms part of the milestones, but one can just as well that indicate that as far as FLISP is concerned, we have put measures in place to improve the program and it is not running very well. But I think there's more progress and mitigation measures that have been put in place to improve the program as it affects the target market that does not have access to the bank. And then in terms of your USDG, I'll skip over to page 37 DG. And the DG has touched mostly on this in the sense that we are let down in terms of our achievement of the MTSF by the metros. At that time, the committee will notice that only 52% of the budget of 10.5 billion was expended by our metros. And metros had only had 3 months to spend the entire budget. So at that time, we could not indicate as to whether our budgets, our target were met. 52% of the target, and suggested to say within the programs that the 52% was buying, it did not yield any results that one would have wanted to pick up or, well, talk to the MTSF targets. But the next slide, as far as USDG concerned, indicates to members that the 52% or the 10.5 billion of the allocation of the metros has been allocated to a number of departments or the number of milestones, and the biggest one being your land acquisition, the housing, roads and stormwater, transport and water and sanitation, including your electricity and digital on the waste management. The reason why we segregate this is just to indicate that much of the USDG is going to the upgrading of informal settlements, and this is where the target and the purpose of the USDG is supposed to be. So metros have invested money on those 5 to 6 big programs where we want to see the progress. But at that time, as I indicated, the 52% was only spent by metros, and it could not contribute much on our MTSF. But I must indicate here that since the end of the financial years of the metros, that target has improved, and metros, all of them, had spent 95% of the USDG. Then, by the end of the year, the chairperson and honorable members, we still had a capacity grant, which was also transferred to the metros. 100 million of it was the amount that was voted, and metros had still 221 in their bank accounts. So the total amount that needed to have been spent by metros by the period ending, which is 31 March for the department, was 321 million. This grant did not do very well. This money has been reverted back to National Treasury, and it has been stopped according to National Treasury, because this is one of the grants that needed to assist metros with capacity, and metros could not spend it wisely within the parameters of the time and the frames that they were granted. And in so much that by the end of this financial year,
which is 30 June of the metros, the money had reverted back to National Treasury, and I think 60% of it was expended by metros. And it was spent only on capacity as well as the support as the framework dictated. But we were not comfortable with the way the grant was managed by the metros, and that money had to revert back to National Treasury. Chair, the last slide talks to the matters that have been raised by the AG and the opinion of the, as far as the annual report is concerned. We must indicate that while we had an unqualified audit opinion, Chairperson, we were still sitting with matters of emphasis from the AG's opinion, whereby we had a material understanding of the vote that related to Program 3, which is our support program or our PPMU, but the program that made us not to understand was the issue of the National Upgrading Support Program towards the upgrading of informal settlements. Chair, the other issue was the issue of material misstatements in the annual report. I think what we have noticed here is that when we were submitting the annual financial statements, some figures had to be misstated. And the AG obviously does pick some of these things. And I think at the end, Chairperson will indicate what measures or mitigating measures have put in place to avoid the reoccurrence of the two. We're just stating the matters that have been raised by the AG. The other matter is in relation to the financial statements which were not prepared according to the prescribed reporting framework, as in the Section 41 of the PFMA. The last being the contractual obligations, and DJ has mentioned the fact that if you don't pay a person within the 30 days, the impact is very huge. Chair, if we go back to what the reasons why we have to put the AG implementation plan, from the fact that we had a material underspending, so much measures have been put in place, particularly for that program, which is our NASP.
CFO, I'm checking if you want to go through this.
If the chair permits, we can leave it because it's readable by members.
Because members have got meetings at 1 and they have not had time to engage.
No, that's fine.
The report. If you could just conclude.
Okay.
The last slide, this part talks to all the issues that the AG wanted us to talk to. Just by way of a conclusion, Chair, you would have noticed that we have not been filling positions. We've been caught between the rock and the hard place, because any position that we fill now, it has to be a contract position because we don't have the budget. We can't commit beyond 3 years because of the budget cuts. So we had to look for what we would call critical positions, because we could have been reckless and advertise and fill those positions and then worry about the budget later. But the PFMA is very clear on the issues that you don't commit without the budget. So we didn't have the budget, and it was extremely difficult for us to fill those positions consistently for almost 2 years now. But we've taken a decision that any new position, even positions that are vacant in the office of the DG, will be advertised on a contract basis for 3 years. And we have made that recommendation to Minister, because that will be the only way to manage the budget, especially those line function positions. We will fill all the positions. We will issue an advert. We didn't want to do it now in December. We wanted to do it in January. But we'll have one big advert for all the vacant positions. Some of them, we had to freeze them because we feel that we don't have all the budget. We've sat down with Treasury. We agreed on reprioritization of some of the positions. I must say that we've got plans to make sure that this does not affect the performance of the department. And we don't want to come back here and use it as an excuse. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much, DG. We are sorry for the time pressures. Honourable members, here is a presentation from the department. Any inputs from the members? Honourable Chris, Honourable Hatting, Honourable Ngwenya, Honourable Kaula, Honourable Samga. Those are the hands that I have. Can I start with Honourable Hatting?
First, thank you. I would like to know whether we will get written responses, because I don't believe that there will be time for oral responses, and then take into account that there are a number of departments still outstanding with their written responses, which we have not yet received over a few weeks now. Can we perhaps set a date that we will be able to get these written responses? Secondly, I have a concern. I don't believe that any of the members here received a copy of the annual report. Certainly I did not, and the chairperson did not, my colleagues next to me did not. And when I went to the place where you should find it, there were only three copies left. I took two, one for the chair and one for myself, and left one. So I think there is a problem with the provision of the annual reports. I would expect that each member of the select committee at least should get a copy of the annual report. Then we've seen now in the financial report of $500 million in the department itself, but then there were a lot of under expenditure in different aspects, conditional grants to provinces, others. I would like to know, what is the total unspent, sorry, I can't see the chair. This is crossing the line.
The offer says to attend. She's talking about that. It's fine, you can proceed.
Thank you. I would like to know, is and all the underspent and forfeited money are on different pages and in different contexts and different reasons. Can we get a consolidated under expenditure on housing in the department and in the entities, please, if that is possible? A lot has been made, and yes, it is the duty and the task of the department to do showcasing here to impress us and to be proud of the achievements. But then a lot has been made of the performance in the past period. Yet the AG actually had concerns and said he identified material misstatements in the annual performance report submitted for auditing. Question is, did we receive the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, or was this part of the misstated performance reported as identified by the AG? Then, and the thing, a little niggling thing, and I mean it's really insignificant in the total budget. But it's a concern that the fruitless and wasteful expenditure highlighted by the AG of 171,000 for rental vehicles for the minister while there were official vehicles available. If we can just perhaps get an explanation of that. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the report from the DG and the CFO. I have quite a few questions. My first question will be based on slide 6, concerning the consumer education program. I have a concern because apparently this has been done in municipalities where people have been taught, you know, on trying to curb the illegal selling of properties. Is there a policing structure that is in place to make sure that people are actually taught about this, number one? And is there any improvement? I'll give an example. I'm from a very small town, Yase Renfontein, in a township, Yase Mohlakeng. And I know for a fact that there are houses that are still sold, and they are sold by councillors of the municipalities. So what is it that are you doing to make sure that this is not happening? Because apparently you say that the educational program has been done in municipalities. Is there a change? Because if you want details on that, I can also give you of the houses that were sold and who sold what and all that. I have all the information. So can you help us deal with that in Gauteng? I'm sure it's not just in Mohlakeng. It's happening in a whole lot of places. On slide 7 as well, regarding the training support and incubation program, I hear the DG mentioned that you have already now dealt with about 200 youth in training them, which I feel it's commendable, yes. Women, how many women have you dealt with? How many women are gaining from this program? And what is your process of follow-up to make sure that, because I know that there are people who attend all these programs and collect the certificates and do nothing about them and go and attend other programs and internship programs. What are the steps in regards to this? What improvement have you made? And do you know of any of these youths that are contributing now in our economy, working, having businesses or being hired or employed or anything like that? On slide 10, the hostel integration. Again, I will go back and make an example from Mohlakeng. We have a hostel. It's been there for years. It is and the main road of the township, it looks horrible. Everything is broken. People stay there for free. They use water. They use illegal connections of electricity and all of those things. It is not integrated to the community. In fact, it poses danger because criminal people are staying there. Drugs are being sold there and all of those things. Do you know of anything that is happening to that hostel and the one in Bekkersdal? If I can have an answer on that. And then page 20, on the housing subsidy structure in Gauteng, I see it's 100% on sites and houses. I just want like to know that the 100%, from which period is it based on, you know, because I know for a fact that there are people who still haven't got their subsidies in connection to their houses. And there are people who are still holding their, what are they called, pink slips or something like that, from 1996, who still don't have their houses, who still haven't had their subsidy given to them or approved. Page 31, which is my last question, in the mining towns as well. I see there's nothing in Randfontein, Mirafong, and Western area. I'm very concerned. That is where I come from, and I have heard that from the statement made by the CFO that you guys are happy, are satisfied with what has been happening in the mining towns. What is your plan for Randfontein and Western area and Mirafong, and when do you plan making changes in those informal settlements? Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Just before, Honourable Kawa, just to remind ourselves, we're speaking about this particular financial year. Maybe some of the questions, you'll keep them for the planning when you come back and present your plans for the next financial year. Honourable Kaula.
No, thanks, Chair. I also want to thank the DG and his team for informing us on how they've performed. It's sort of comments more than being questions, because my colleagues have covered me on all these aspects. I wanted to raise questions on the issue of underspending, which is a concern. The AG has raised it. If we can get details, like Honorable Hutting was stating, I want to go back on this one, on that one, Chairperson, to say it seems like the most of the underspending is by the metros, and every year I've raised this with the minister. A lot of money is given to the metros on many, many programs which are grants to the metros to the detriment of smaller municipalities. And I think it's about time that the department reviews that, because you can see that the metros are letting you down. They are not spending. We have been stating it with Honorable Dlamini every time the minister comes to us with the budget. We state this thing that the metros are being overfed. Now they are not growing. They are getting thinner. They are making you thinner. They are overfeeding them. They look at your food. They are not eating it. Give money to other municipalities, rural areas, DG. We need it there. The second one is on this issue that was raised by Honorable Ntimandi here. The illegal selling of houses, it does need to be controlled. Maybe the other thing, DG, that we need to look into is this issue of people benefiting illegally as a result, because it's not a need to them. It's a scheme of making money. So the issue of who is benefiting must be really be closely monitored. People benefit not because they need houses, but because they want to make money. Especially, you know, we are not going to be able to eradicate informal settlements in South Africa, because a lot of it comes from there. A person moves away from a rural area to an informal settlement in a big city, and is a beneficiary where he has left, is a beneficiary again there. There is a lot of double, triple, whatever parking that is happening in terms of your programs. Something needs to be done to closely monitor that when a person has benefited, they don't go elsewhere and benefit again and again and again and again. You'll find that there are people who are benefiting in all the provinces, because the informal settlements are in all the provinces. So they register for benefiting in all the informal settlements in the province. And what they end up doing, they make money. They sell this especially to our illegal foreign brothers and sisters who are here in the country. So really, you need to work very closely with the municipalities in terms of saying, when you build a house, I stated this before, that when you build a house, it must be for somebody. It just cannot just be a house. So we'll see when it has finished as to who it goes to. Which drives me to the next point, the last point I wanted to raise, that has been raised by Honorable Ngwenya Ken here. In the hostels especially, you find out that you build these units and these blocks of flats, they will remain there for ages, not being occupied. It's happening in all the provinces, happening in Umlazi, it's happening in Wamash, in Gauteng, it's all over. Why do you build blocks of flats and you do not have a list who you are building for, and these will stay for ages not being occupied? Because it leads into other social ills which are non-stop. Let's sort out all these issues. Maybe the situation will get better. These units are there also in Umlazi, not being occupied. There have been issues in Jacobs, people scrambling for who is in, who is out. Cornupia, the same thing happened. It's all over. Because it takes too long when they have been finished for people to be moved into them. Thank you very much, Chair.
As many of the questions I'm still as pendulegile kabe since the presentation yake UDG ngenxaxiso yake. But Chair, I'm worried about program 3. Program 2 bonakala yona program ngakwazi ukuchitha kakuhle imali. And phakusayithwa into ye capacity. Yintoni department eyenzayo ukuaddressa lento ine capacity apha kwi department? Mhlawumbi singaphuma njani kule problem esinayo? Umzekelo, kule minyaka 2014-2015 indlela i-department inkcitho yayo asikhange sifikelele kwi-target ebesizinike yona. I-capacity le sihlalo ithengwa phi, okanye yintoni lenza into bathina singakwazi kokuba ekugqibeleni sibe namhlanje sathethe ngale nto yale capacity? Ndinaloo question xa sihlala. Inkosi.
Thank you very much, honourable members. Let me start addressing the issue of
written responses. There is no way that they can respond. I agree. But DG, we need a commitment from your side that we are going to get the responses in writing. We're not going to follow them up, but just let's have them. And also the issue of the report. Can it be made available? I don't know how you do it. But it only makes sense when we have this before, so that we are able to speak to the actual. Because some of the questions that we are asking you are here. I want to speak to Tengbanlo Tengzanev. Who's the person next to you? Nomfunda. I was working in that office. Don't make things complicated. This report is supposed to be very simple, straightforward. What you presented to us last year, you add a column of what we have achieved, what we have not achieved, what we are planning to do. End of the report. Because if you add a number of things, they tend to confuse. One very simple, straightforward report, speaking to the financial year that we're talking to. When it comes to the what is it? This thing. The STMTSF. A very important report. But now we're focusing on the particular financial year. So help them to simplify your report because you are doing reports. That's my plea from your side. You know why I'm raising this. We are missing something that says this is what we have planned. It comes up in your pie chart, but it doesn't speak to the actual report. We want you to say, this is what we have planned to do. We have been able to achieve this. We have not achieved this. Partially achieved. Simple. We are missing that in the report. And it is here. But we can't look at this. We want to look at your presentation. Your presentation should speak to that. We are missing that information. DG, maybe when you respond, try to give us a summary of what I'm saying now. She must just summarize in the plan that you submitted at these columns that I'm talking about, so that it will be easy for us. I'm not going to go to a number of issues. We have questions that we have, analysis here that we've done. She's going to give you, Marcel. She's going to give you those questions that we have. And when you submit the responses, you're going to add them. There is a grant that you that is not coming to you. Go straight to the metro. I don't know why you are accounting. It still doesn't make sense to me. What are you accounting for? Why are you accounting on that grant? If it doesn't come to you, what are you accounting for? You did not receive the money straight from National Treasury to metros, but you report about it. What? Because you're not accountable for that money. Maybe it is allocated to them through you, but I still don't understand why is it like that. The second matter, you did not say anything about houses for military veterans. I don't know whether in that particular year there was no plan to build houses. I know there was, but I'm not receiving anything in terms of report. Maybe because we cut a number of slides, it could be there. The three, for me it was three provinces. I think it was Free State, it was Gauteng, it was Eastern Cape, DG, during a Minmec. Yipile nabe over more than 300 invoices. It's Free State. Versus the big houses that they are building. What is the impact of the big sizes on that money? We will want to know, as a committee, we must find time to call those provinces. The Eastern Cape as well, they must deal with the accruals. They must deal with them. If it means that them reduce the number of houses to build in a financial year to deal with the accruals, let it be so. There's not going to be money from anywhere else. So they must take a responsibility. I still maintain that, as I said that day. But we would like, Gauteng, what was the issue about Gauteng again? I think there was an issue about Gauteng as well, but not in this report. Gumin Meg.
What is the performance?
Yeah, a performance.
Yeah, they have spent the budget, but the milestones
are not. Yeah, yeah. We want to know what happens with the money. Did it go to accruals? Did they use it for something else? We need to know what is happening. They may not come here, but we do need a report from these three provinces. What is happening? How are they planning to come out of the situation they've put themselves into? Those are the issues from my side, but we are requesting that we get the responses in writing and also simplify this reporting so that it is easy to follow what was presented to us as a plan. DG, I don't know whether you have one word to say before we close. Otherwise, I'm not expecting you to respond now.
We will respond in writing, Chair. I think it's important to state that the two provinces that you mentioned, Gauteng and Eastern Cape, they also they have been summoned by the other portfolio committee on human settlements to do exactly what you are asking us to do. They were supposed to present today, but it's been rescheduled to January next year.
We also want a free state. The over 300 invoices that are not paid within 30 days, they may not come here. We are very much, as you know, that we are responsible for 5 departments, but we want those reports. After looking at the reports, we'll then agree as a committee whether we want them to come or not.
Yes.
Okay.
You can summon them to come at any time.
Okay.
Yeah. The copies of the annual report will be made available.
Okay.
I've asked the secretariat to assist us.
Okay.
Thanks.
Honourable members, thank you very much for your time and the department, and the meeting stands adjourned. Thank you. Thank you.